Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. And today we're going to be introducing our guest, Reginald Clemens. And Reginald will be speaking about his case as a young man accused and judged for a crime he personally did not do. Also joining Blog Talk Radio in support of Reginald is Madeline Colburn, chaplain and a strong advocate for the incarcerated men and women. Madeline has been an advocate for some time, and she has been working with Reginald Clemens as well as working with some other male and female prisoners. So you will be hearing from her more often on the radio as we bring on the people that she's been working with. Right now, Reginald, I don't believe, is on with us as yet. So Madeline, if you want to talk a little bit about what you do and how people can get in contact with you and also the work you've been doing with Reginald and others.
Okay, great. Thank you for having me, Leona. My name is Madeline Colburn, and as a volunteer chaplain in the Missouri Eastern Region Department of Corrections, I've been doing this serving in ministry for about 27 years. And I've come in contact with quite a few people that are incarcerated that is a known fact that they are innocent. They've been wrongfully convicted. And that's something that I have taken a passion toward, being able to work with families, making the connection on their behalf of who they need to get with as far as legal advisement, whether it's the media that needs to be involved, whether it's a state representative that is working with the Department of Corrections committee. These are some of the things that I've been involved with over the last 27 years working with families. Currently, the gentleman that is due to be on the phone, I'm still working with him. He was a former death row inmate in Missouri since he was 19, and Reginald Clemens now today is 50 years old. He's been incarcerated wrongfully for a crime that he did not commit. There was no DNA evidence towards him. His co-defendant has been executed in regards to the charges that were brought upon them through a notorious prosecutor named Niels Moss. He's now deceased, that is, as of 2012, but he was very intricate involved with prosecutorial misconduct throughout the state of Missouri in cases that he was involved with regarding African-American men and women that he prosecuted. And Reginald Clemens was pretty much one of those victims, I would say, that got caught up in the political rat race with Niels Moss and the current circuit attorney. He was running for that position, so to speak. Needless to say, there was a lot of things that were done that was unethical, that was misconduct of prosecutorial, hidden evidence, lies that went forth, people that have written books off of this case. It's just been a lot of things that has been involved with Reginald Clemens' case. It's so much that I could say within his time frame. But feel free to look him up. Reginald Clemens, the Chena Rock Bridge murders. This was involving with two white female sisters, Julie and Robin Curry, back in 1991 when this situation took place. And they were convicted, all three African-American males. They were teenagers. They got convicted, and all three of them got the death penalty. But there was one that was declared mild retardation. So his name is Antonio Richardson. He's still incarcerated, but with life. They actually commuted him due to a law that President Ronald Reagan had that you couldn't execute individuals with a low IQ. So he was spared in that sense, and he's still fighting for his freedom just as Reginald Clemens is. Reginald Clemens has been personally targeted, I would say, in regards to a lot of the things that took place. It even came down to the Missouri Supreme Court that had written an opinion that he was due to be released immediately because they had found fault in things that had not taken place that were not true. And they had even assigned a special masters to Reginald's case back in 2015. Reginald got back in court in 2017 on his case, but they did double jeopardy on this gentleman's case in regards to what took place. The lady that was actually in office at the time, leaving office due to retirement, she brought the case back up. She wanted to fight this case and promised the family she'll do whatever she needed to do. And this is what got him back in the situation and back in the media. It was a lot of things that was coerced in the case, of course. Reginald Clemens, like I said, he could tell his story better than I can. I'm just giving synopsis. But what is happening currently with him, he got commuted from death row to life with parole. He has since gone up for parole, and they have denied him. They have taken him out of the Missouri Department of Corrections POS system to where if you were to put in his DOC number or his name, you would not be able to trace or find him. I understand within the last month he has been transferred to another facility at our state capitol in Jefferson City. I'm waiting to see how that has gone for him. Also, he's in a lawsuit currently that Reginald and several other inmates were found with mace. They were soaked in mace by the correctional officers for praying. He is of Muslim descent, as well as some of the other gentlemen, and for whatever the reason, the correctional guards didn't want them praying, and so they all got maced and put into solitary confinement. And these are the things that he's fighting right now today. For whatever reason, I'm not sure why none of the organizations are wanting to look further into the situation, but I am working with him and his family, trying to continuously get his voice heard. Such as like working with Leona and getting him to become a guest back on her show to give new updates of what is taking place within his current situation where he's located at now, as well as what he's still fighting for on his behalf. And soon I'll be having another young lady come on the air, Bertha Owens. She's been incarcerated wrongfully for 25 years in Missouri by the same prosecutor, Niels Moss, who is now deceased. And these are some of the things that I'm just really shedding light on and bringing to attention to the wrongful convictions in Missouri. And this is what I will continue to do until the day that God takes the breath out of me, because justice and injustice anywhere is everywhere. And that's just how I look upon it. So, Leona, I'll stop right there in that regard.
I want to thank you, Madeline, because you have been shedding a lot of light. And I want to find out if Reginald Clemens is on with us. I just got there's a number that just came in, 510.
Okay.
Leona, that's me. It's Astika.
Okay.
510 number.
Yeah. I think Reginald would call from a 573 number.
A 573. Okay. I want to introduce also Astika because Astika Joshi, because Astika is a strong advocate for restorative justice, and she's going to be doing some radio shows as well in upcoming weeks on restorative justice. So, Astika, if you want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing as well, I really would love to have you let the audience know.
Yeah, I appreciate you giving me the time to do that, Leona. Excuse me. Hi, everyone. As Leona said, my name is Astika Joshi, and I am currently an undergraduate student. I'm in my senior year, and I'm actually applying to law school currently where, I hope to take restorative justice into my law school education and advocate for prisoners' rights, as well as putting more community resources and education and rehabilitative services within our courts to make sure that, people who are either wrongfully convicted or, maybe they have some certain circumstances that cause them to commit a crime, they are getting the help that they deserve rather than being incarcerated or worse. So that's what I'm here for. That's why I wanted to join onto these podcasts because, I get to hear from incarcerated individuals who are wrongfully convicted, and I get to use that sort of platform to bring that to my, law school education and, talk about that with my peers, talk about that with my professors, and just find solutions. So thank you guys for your time, and I'm really excited to be here.
I really appreciate you too, Astika. I know that your schedule, as Madeline's and others who have been trying to find time to come on the show to talk about some of these things, I know your schedules are very tight, and that's why I feel even more honored to have you on. And what you're doing, Astika, as a young lady, I want to commend you for it because not a lot of people are out there doing what you're doing as well. So restorative justice is something that's been talked about a lot lately. I'm really glad that it's coming to fruitage. Again, Reginald Clemens, I know, Madeline, that he was on death row, and for some reason, apparently, they're starting to acknowledge the fact that he possibly is innocent. and maybe that's why he was put on life sentence in comparison to the death penalty?
Yeah, I would have to say that is partially the situation that took place in court when he was before the trial. Basically, what it is that, in my personal opinion, because there's so much evidence that has been overlooked, like when Reginald got commuted, it wasn't until after his commuting sentence that he found out there were 25 boxes of evidence that had not been gone through in the state capitol in Jefferson City, Missouri. Now, I'm not sure why that is, but that's the current situation to his case. There's been a lot of things that have been hidden within his case, documents that I have that are bona fide and authentic that shows his innocence, but for whatever reason, this was a high-profile case. It was a very political situation that was involved with this. The prosecutor was running for the chief DA at the time, you know, and now he's deceased, but his penmanship of letter writing still has Reginald, as well as Bertha and some others that I've been working with that are incarcerated. And this just needs to stop. You know, my main focus is hopefully that this case can be overturned, as well as all cases by Nils Moss, the former prosecutor who's now deceased, that those cases can be looked into. That's what I'm looking forward to at this point right now. But, of course, it's a lot going on. I just was on the phone, left a voicemail for State Representative Lakeisha Bosley. I understand that she has written House Bill 1042. That's the actual bill that wants to help wrongful convicted inmates be able to get compensated from getting out of jail, whether it's with DNA or not, because right now Missouri has a law that states that if it's not DNA proved, that if you are to get exonerated, you get no compensation, no matter how long you've been incarcerated. Kind of like in Kevin Strickland's case last Tuesday being released after 43 years in Missouri, wrongfully convicted. Missouri didn't give him any compensation. However, the great people that have a willing heart have donated through GoFundMe, and his GoFundMe as of today is over $1.75 million that has been raised within a week on his behalf. So I know that there are some people out there and that they're there for justice. It's just having to get the stories out, and having this platform and medium is surely one of the ways to do that, because folks can always go back and replay and listen to the message.
And I want to just reiterate yesterday when Madeline had mentioned Mr. Strickland, who had been incarcerated for 43 years and was found to be innocent all those years. His mother passed away while he was incarcerated or just came out. So a lot of these things happen. And I encourage people, and I do it all the time, to look at these cases as individual cases, not stereotyping the incarcerated population, because every circumstance is different. And there are so many people that are wrongfully convicted behind those prison walls. There are so many people that were victims before becoming offenders behind those prison walls. And there are so many people who have been incarcerated for so many years that they have aged out. There's compassionate release that people are looking at right now, especially a lot of the legislative members. So we need to look at these issues, too, of these people who have served enormous time while incarcerated. And we know what goes on behind those prison bars. We know the pain and sorrow and suffering that these people go through. And I know a lot of you may say, you know, you do the crime, you do the time. That's right. They're going to do the time. But let them do the time without having to be physically abused, psychologically tormented. And we have a lot of that going on in the prisons today. Too many people are committing suicide. They just can't take it. Too many people are being tormented and tortured while incarcerated. And this is something they do with people, enemies in other countries. It shouldn't be done to citizens of the United States, nor should it be done to anyone else, whether they're around the country or across the pond. But we want to look at these cases as well, because there's too much suffering in this country, and there's too much going on in this country that should not be going on. We live in a country, as Miriam Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist from another country, the Netherlands, she speaks of this all the time. The things that go on in the United States, the injustices, you know, the racism, the hatred, the vengeance, the retaliation. There's so much going on in this country that needs not be going on. And I just want to bring that up. So we're going to, while we're waiting for Reginald, and that's why I have the show for an hour and a half today, because I'm hoping that he will be able to call in that time frame, even if it is for the 15 minutes that they allow these phone calls from the prisons to come through. We'll at least hear from him. But I'm going to open the board up. We have quite a few callers, and anyone have anything to say, please state your name and state your concerns.
Hello, Leona. This is Oyate Yota.
Would you like to say something?
I'm from South Dakota. Can you hear me?
A little muffled, but we can hear you.
I don't know why. Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm from South Dakota. I was in Wounded Knee with Kaminta. I'm a representative of an independent Lakota Nation state. And you know that, you probably know from Kaminta, that we're preparing to present our case.
I'm sorry.
For recognition. And, you know, we're saying that we want complete control of our borders that were in that, that were ours before the 1868 treaty, because that treaty was violated. Every single provision in it.
Can I just interrupt you for a minute?
That treaty, Leona.
We're having a hard time hearing you for one thing, and one of the things we want to focus on today is the prison issues, because this is what the show was about today. Now, I have on Tuesdays, I have a show where anybody can call in and talk about any issues, but today we want to keep our focus on the wrongfully convicted, and that is with Reginald Clement and others that Madeline Colburn has been working with. So if you have something to say about the treaty, please feel free to do so. But we're going to keep it short today and also try to keep it as clear as possible, because we are having a difficult time understanding what you're saying.
Okay, well, I'll see if I can get a better connection next time. I'll let it go for next time.
Yeah, we can hear you. It's just like I say, it sounds a little muffled for some reason. I don't know why. And as I say to the audience, on Tuesdays, I keep it open for anyone that has anything to say about anything pertaining to any kind of injustice, whether it be behind the prison walls or in the reservations, or whether it be in the community, or whether it be in the rehabilitation centers, or whether it be in the streets, because we hear a lot of injustices going on right now behind those prison walls, in the communities, on these reservations, and all the oppression that everybody's going through right now. And I want to get that out there, and I want everyone to be able to speak about these things, because each and every issue is very, very important, very important. Too many people are committing suicide. Too many people are being shot down for no reason at all and killed. Too many people are having things taken from them, property. I'm going to say one thing. In the prisons today, including Massachusetts, especially Massachusetts, a lot of property is being taken from these incarcerated individuals. A lot of their properties are being taken. Television. I know somebody that has had their television taken three different televisions throughout the years of incarceration. These are things that need to be stopped. These are things that need to be looked at. Not only are they having their property taken, but when you go and you think about these people that are going to war in other countries, first of all, the United States at one time never was touched. We are too far from anything that could have affected us. And unfortunately, 9/11 took place. That was one incident. But we have no business going over to other countries and getting into their business. But every time there's a war going on over there and we go over there, our troops come back with something. Now, our government comes back with something. It comes back with the oil from another country. It comes back with the diamonds and the gold from another country. How in the heck does anybody think that this country was built? The United States, the last continent, this country was built on the blood, sweat, and tears of people from other countries that were attacked unnecessarily by this country We just pulled troops out from Afghanistan. Pulled troops out there because we didn't want to have our troops in other countries. But yet now we're hearing the president talking about sending troops to all these other countries that are at war with one another. We need to take care of business in the United States of America. We need to take care of business in our own backyards. And this is getting ridiculous. So, yes, I apologize for letting you know that today is not a talk about the reservation, but it is a talk about everything that's going on in the United States of America. We have people committing suicide. We have people being shot in the back by people we're supposed to trust, people we're supposed to seek help from. People are so afraid to stop their cars now when the police stop them because they don't know if they're going to come out of it alive. We have people that are being hung, and they claim it's suicide when the person the day before was making all kinds of plans for college or something else. We live in a country where I am so tired of hearing people trying to impress themselves and pat themselves on the back. We have people that are so insecure in the government that they have to please their peers, even though behind their peers' back they're saying they're a pain in the behind, but yet they're going to agree with them because they don't want to look different. They don't want to be any less than their peers and their peers' friends. When are we going to stop being leaders instead of followers? When are we going to stop making up our own decisions when we know something is wrong? When are we going to try to help those people instead of letting them die slowly, a torturous death, because we're too busy trying to make ourselves look good to help those that are seriously in need? We're coming up to Christmas, the birth of Christ. And what is everybody going to be doing? Celebrating by buying gifts instead of showing a compassionate heart to help those people who are crying out. The very person that you are celebrating the birth of, the Christ Jesus, would not even appreciate what all of you are doing because he wouldn't be out there in the stores, retail stores, buying gifts. He would be out there helping those behind those prison walls that are suffering. He would be in the communities helping those that are being shot down. He would be in the reservations helping those that are being oppressed. So we have a major problem in this country, and there are so many different issues that's why everybody's trying to get their stories out. And right now, the wrongfully convicted, and people talk about the addicted. There's been a lot of crimes committed because of addiction. People don't realize a lot of these people that are addicted got addicted either from getting prescriptions from doctors for pain or from doing the drugs and alcohol to cover up their own painful traumas that they've had happen. Get real, people. This is the United States of America. Everybody's supposed to be so well educated, and yet they're so busy trying to look good with their peers, trying to be a big shot, trying to get all this power, this money, this fame, while other people are dying at the hands of ignorant people, hateful people. And why do you hate somebody because of the pigmentation of their skin? What does the pigmentation of anyone's skin have to do with anything? We should be proud of ourselves. We've got people from every single country in the United States representing their country. People go to those countries for vacations because they love those countries. They love what they do. They love how they live. And yet when they're living right here in our own country, they hate it. What does that, it doesn't even make sense. So yes, I'm going to open this line up and I want everybody to speak their piece. Whatever it is that's on your mind, please, please feel free to talk about it because this has to get out. And we may be talking to the wind when it comes to people influential enough to make a difference, but at least we're letting it out to one another who hopefully one of these days will realize that they are the government. The government is the people. And when the people start waking up and stop being so afraid of what they're going to look like to others, then maybe we'll see some changes. You don't have to impress anybody. Everybody came into this world as innocent babies. You don't have to be afraid to speak out. You don't have to be afraid of what other people are going to say. Be yourself. Be the leader that you are and not the follower that they're trying to make you. So please, everybody, anybody that has something to say, please say it.
Yeah, Leona, thank you so much for sharing that, and I definitely hear how passionate you are about this topic, so thank you for sharing. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just, I know that, you know, that was definitely probably really difficult for some of us to hear that, you know, we have more followers than people who are actually trying to help. And I completely agree with everything that you said. So to lighten up the mood a little bit, and I hope that this definitely does, because even though it does talk about injustice, it is a little bit of a victory for an African-American man. I recently looked on the internet, and it says that this man named Anthony Broadwater, who was wrongly convicted for the rape of a 18-year-old woman about 16 years ago, I believe, was recently exonerated. What happened was in the lineup, the victim had identified the wrong person, and even though the investigators knew that, they still went ahead to charge Broadwater. But he has been vindicated, and he is now a free man. And the victim, her name is Alice Siebold, had written books on, you know, her experience with being sexually assaulted. And people are demanding that she compensate him for the amount that she earned from, you know, her best-selling book or whatever it may be. People are demanding that she give that money to Anthony Broadwater. And I was hoping that I could get some of the viewers' thoughts on this. Like, do you guys think that she should be compensating Broadwater with the sales that she got from her book? Or how do we achieve justice in this situation?
Okay, Madeline, can you speak a little bit about on that? Because you've been pretty active in those situations yourself. So if you can talk a little bit about that.
Say that again. She was breaking up, coming through.
Okay.
I heard you call me.
Yeah. Estika, can you repeat that, what you said about that gentleman? I'm sorry, what the name was?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes,
yeah.
You're coming through now on my end. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Clear.
Oh, great. My apologies. Yeah, his name was Anthony Broadwater. He's an African-American man. He was incarcerated for 16 years for a sexual assault that he did not commit. And the woman who was the victim of the sexual assault put out books and was recently going to get a Netflix show on his experience being a victim. And people are now demanding that the sales that she received from her book be used to compensate Broadwater. And I was wondering from our viewers, is that how we get justice? Like, how do we define justice in this situation? Do we take from the victim? Like, do we take from someone who still experienced sexual assault? Or do we take from, you know, the justice system? Like, how do we achieve justice in this scenario?
Now, if I'm hearing you right, the gentleman that was wrongfully convicted of 16 years, he's out with no compensation of wrongful conviction. What state is this?
This is, I believe it is New York. I can check really quickly on that for you.
Okay. Can you give me his name again? Because I don't want to speak prematurely. I'll need to look at the case, but I could speak
sure.
A scenario.
Yeah, his name
yeah,
is
let,
Anthony
let me write his
Broadwater.
Name down. Anthony Broadwater?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Based upon what I'm hearing you say, like I said, don't take this, you know, for our fantasy. But as a scenario, what I would say, if I'm hearing you right, and you correct me if I'm wrong, the gentleman mm-hmm. Anthony Broadwaters that was wrongfully convicted for 16 years is out with no compensation, allegedly, from the state. But the gentleman who was convicted for this crime, he is now in a position to write about the situation and possibly get a proposal from Netflix about, I guess, his life, the situation, and funding would go to him? Is that right?
No, the situation is that Anthony, you know, he was not involved in this crime at all. He did not commit it. And so the victim, the one who is, you know, the person who was sexually assaulted, she wrote a book on her experience,
was
going
That's
to be adapted.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that is a strange situation.
Wow.
He was found innocent, and the victim mm-hmm. herself is writing the book and getting money, and he's in that book?
I don't know. I haven't read the book, but I believe that, like, she does mention her perpetrator. Yeah. I don't know in what sense.
Well, that's kind of the same scenario that has happened in Reginald Clemens' case. He's an innocent individual in this, but the victim's cousin, she ended up writing several books and getting them put into Columbia Law School in Missouri and doing book tours, and the former prosecutor, he helped her write the book. He flew to Baltimore, Maryland to help her write and give some inserts for the book. And she's making all kind of money off of her cousin's death, but at the expense of these three black young men that were innocent. So I get what you're saying in that situation. It doesn't make it right, but then you got to look at the freedom of speech here. We can't stop her from telling her story, you know. And in his case, somebody should be helping him tell his story. You know, that's just the way I see it, because she's going to get an audience regardless, you know, being the sexual assault victim. So, you know, you can't look down on that. But the truth should be told if she knows that this man is innocent and have since been released. You would think there would be some kind of bridge there to be gapped, a gap, you know, to bring them together so that she would understand the truth. I'm sure she had to go to his trial or his court hearing to see that he was being exonerated.
And even
if his name is mentioned in her book without his consent, then, yeah, I can see that being a problem if he had the right legal team on his side. Because she can't write a book about him, and he's been exonerated from the crime, but her book content, allegedly, because I haven't read it, don't know anything about it, with him in there, period. Maybe she wrote the book while he was still locked up. I'm not sure.
But he does
have legal grounds for that. People get their books stopped all the time, you know, for situations like this without getting written express consent from the character who's being written about or the situation. Now, this being a public case, no, you couldn't stop her from talking about it, but how does she paint this man, Anthony Broadwaters, in if he's in her book before she even knew the truth? Because that's what happened with the case with Reginald Clemens and the victim's cousin, Janine Cummings. She wrote the book about this horrific crime that took place, but it was actually her brother that admitted to making a sexual assault at his cousin, and she fell over the bridge into the Mississippi River. But he got paid $150,000 by the St. Louis Police Department, basically, from saying he was beaten by the police department, and that was far from the truth because his father was in the next room while he was being investigated. But with Reginald Clemens and his co-defendant, they were beaten. And when they went to their arraignment hearing, it was the judge who then told them they needed to leave there and go immediately to the hospital. There's x-rays and everything of a fractured bone in the face and everything that happened to Reginald Clemens due to this situation, only to find out he's innocent. So I understand the nature, level, and concern of Mr. Anthony Broadwaters, and I'm going to do my research to see actually where is he now that he's been, what is he involved with now, who's surrounding him. These are important elements to understand, because most of the time when folks get exonerated, it's good for maybe a day or a week. They do the TV circuits and interviews, but after that, that's it. Unless you have some family that's still alive that was in your life prior to you being exonerated that is there for you. But most of the time, they come home with nothing and surrounded by no one. They have to figure it out on their own here, at least in Missouri. That's what I've come to see as a pattern of practice. But it would be interesting, and I understand you'd probably be taking a form of feedback in regards to what can be done in that situation. And the question would have to be, did she write the book prior to his exoneration? Because if that's the case, she wouldn't have known that he wasn't the person that the perpetrator.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your thoughts. I really appreciate your insight. So I hear what you're saying about did she know that he was innocent before he was exonerated? And it's kind of a tricky situation because she, in the lineup, she was presented or in front of her was five young African-American men. And I believe Anthony was number four in the lineup. And she had said that it was, she had identified Anthony Bodwater as her perpetrator. And then the investigator said, oh, no, your perpetrator was actually number five, but you can go with number four. And so it was kind of an issue of, like, I guess the investigators tainting her perception of who the perpetrator actually was. And I believe she said, or someone else had said, that, like, all of the suspects in the lineup looked like twins. So it was very hard for her to decipher exactly, like, who it was. So that's what I know so far from my research. It is kind of a sticky situation, but it is. I think it's reasonable to say either or. Like, she did know that he was innocent, or that she didn't know he was innocent. So it's definitely just a sticky situation, and it's one to definitely do more research on. But I hear you that, you know, if she did know.
Well, if I may interject, based on what you just said, I just typed his name in, and apparently this is so new that as of yesterday, because it's in the news, Anthony Bodwater has raised $30,000 as anger grows against Alice Siebold. And then it also talked about 21 hours ago that Anthony Bodwater cries as his accuser apologizes for her false rape conviction. And then her book, her name is Alice Siebold, and she wrote Lucky Pulled Lucky. That was the title of her book. But in the news says that Alice Siebold's Lucky pulled following Anthony Broadwater's exoneration. So that means the publisher pulled her books, as I stated. That was the book written prior to his exoneration? Did she know? But looking at this article that I'm reading right now, it stated that the publisher has pulled all of her books because it would bring a factor of integrity upon the publishing company now.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to pull her book from the shelves, and apparently this was a case 40 years ago or something to that fact?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all over the Internet. Something just recently happened within the last 24 hours, because if you just type his name in, it's part of the top stories on Google. So the documentary about Anthony Bodwater's wrongful rape, I'm reading that right now. So I think it goes back to what I was saying. It's going to be a lot of controversy here, because knowing the fact that she now has apologized for making false claims without full evidence of knowing, and then continue to move forward with her story being victimized and wanting to constantly point fingers at this man, only to find out that he's now been exonerated. Everything is out the window. Everything should be off the table, because it doesn't make it authentic.
You know what I see happening right now in this country? There's a lot of reform, criminal justice reform, prison reform happening, or being discussed and considered. We have legislative members across the country now who are trying to do away with life without parole, who are trying to do away with solitary confinement, restrictive housing, wrongfully convicted. And yet, when they try to file these bills, these House bills, to do these things, a lot of their constituents are against what they're doing. So it gets put on the back burner. We see a lot of this happening now in the United States, too. Massachusetts especially. They, at one point in time, they tried to pass the bill to do away with life sentences or life and life without parole sentencing. And some of the people... granted, families of victims are going to be anyway, but the thing is, we can't, these are leaders. These are supposed to be leaders, not followers. So when they get opposition to what they're trying to do, they need to explain again. This is not a stereotypical view of all these prisoners. Some people have suffered much more, so I can see them being opposed to it. Just like the petition that I filed to do away with, to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. So many people should be signing that petition, because we have, the prisons are full with people that have mental illnesses, people that have addictions, you know, people that are wrongfully convicted. So long-term residential treatment facilities, this is another thing people don't seem to comprehend. When we talk about replacing prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, we're talking about replacing these prisons with other prisons, another prison, but it's not a prison of abuse. It's a prison of rehabilitation. And whether they keep these people in for a life or life without, once they get into these long-term residential treatment facilities, that's fine. But at least these people are not being tortured and abused. They're being rehabilitated. They're receiving the proper treatment from real medical providers coming from the community. And that's why I say American Psychological Association, I am so disgusted with them, because instead of using the money they have now for research, which everybody knows what the problems are, they need to start using some of their senses, some of their education, and some of their money to actually start adamantly insisting upon going inside the prison and meeting with these prisoners, trying to help them. Just like Mass General Hospital, Lahey Clinic, Brigham and Women's, and all these other hospitals throughout the country. These are educated, trained. They're doing hands-on all the time. They should be focused more on trying to get into these prisons and trying to do some help, do some positive stuff. And the media needs to get into these prisons and seeing all the injustice that's being done behind those prison walls. Because we have legislative members that are trying to find answers for these people that are being abused, and yet prison officials are lying to them. There was a riot at one of the prisons in Massachusetts in January 10th of 2020. Several prisoners attacked three or four guards, and they ended up getting shipped out after what they did, and some of them ended up in the hospital. So what did they do? They went on an unprovoked attack on all the prisoners and said, when you mess with one of our guards, we mess with all of you. So a lot of these innocent people that were behind those bars that had nothing to do with the riot, ended up being beaten, assaulted, and placed in the hospital. So these are things that we need to look at. These long-term residential treatment facilities are going to have guards there, but they're also going to have professional doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and people that are actually going to do good. There are prisoners who have had permanent damage done during surgery by prison doctors. Permanent damage done that cannot be undone when they go in for a minor surgery. Many of them are now permanently damaged. So this is why I say long-term residential treatment facilities need to replace these prisons. And if we have intelligent and motivated lawmakers, they need to look at these as a possibility, as a consideration. And I'm going to say once again, when I talk about these victims behind those prison walls, does not mean I'm forgetting about those victims in the community, in their homes, or wherever they may be. Because when I hear about these things happening to them, I get so disgusted myself, and I feel so much compassion for them. But we also have to realize there are victims out there, unlike them, that have caused others to stumble through lies and deception, just like we have, like you mentioned, the prosecution, corruption in the courts.
That's where it starts with the prosecutor.
Exactly. And these are where a lot of people are being not only imprisoned for wrongful convictions, but also given very harsh sentences. I know first-time offenders who committed one offense during a time when they were going through psychological issues, serious psychological issues. And that one-time crime, one fatal shot, getting a life without parole, being kept on the worst block in a maximum secure prison, having all their belongings taken from them, being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, all these things go on, not with just that one prisoner, but with prisoners across this country. And again, that's where it falls back on suicide. We have a high rate of suicides in prisons in the United States. And if the prisoners didn't commit the suicide themselves, then we have to look at the officials that are covering up once again. But in any circumstance, we need to have that petition signed. We have over 2.3 million people incarcerated in the United States prisons, mass incarcerations, prisons for profit, vengeance, retaliation. These are all reasons why we need to do away with prisons and get these people the treatment they need. If they're serial killers, if they're terrorists, keep them in these facilities forever. But at least we know they're going to be getting the treatment that they need and not the abuses.
Yeah, this is definitely something that I would think that the abuse and torture will come into play with the United Nations. People have thoughts on, you know, the UN, but if we're not getting direct assistance as advocates and activists on behalf of these families that have gone through the atrocities they have with the prison system, I don't think that it's going to be of any help, like going to the politics. They're being selected for a position. It ain't even about voting. You know, they're going to get in who they want to get in. But the fact of the matter is nothing has changed. In the ministry now for 27 years in the state of Missouri, and I have not seen any changes, even with Mr. Kevin Strickland coming out of there after 43 years. He's the only standing wrongful convicted prisoner in Missouri, and there was no compensation for him. Whatever. Missouri turned a blind eye to it. That's
not
right.
This is not only Missouri. This is why everybody's always talking about their particular state. It's happening here. This is only the only state. No, it's not happening just in one state. It's happening in states across the country. I did, New Vision Organization was doing national, we were involved in prisons in California and Texas, in Alabama and Missouri, in Massachusetts, in New York, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in all the Arkansas, in Illinois, Chicago, all these places. We were dealing with prisoners in every one of those states, and they were all talking about the same issues, the same punishment, the same tortures, the same injustice, corruption. So we're not talking, when we say one state, unfortunately, this is not federal, this is state by state. If it was a federal prison where everybody was in a federal prison, that would be perfect because it would be under the auspice of one national. But here we are having each and every state operated differently. The problems are all the same. The issues are all the same. But the governors in every state are different. And we have in Massachusetts, we have a governor who the parole board has been trying to get these prisoners paroled, and the governor refuses to parole them, even though they passed through the parole board. So we have other governors in other states, unfortunately, thinking the same way. And so every state is different in that respect, but the problems are the same in all the states.
Leona, this is Tanupak. Let me jump in here with all of you guys now, okay? Because, you know, just the other day, as I was telling Sister Leona back on Monday or Tuesday, Wednesday, the other day, I said, I went to a prison to meet with three women, actually five of them. Two of them got out and, you know, directed me where to go inside and do all this stuff. But one of the things that I find very interesting, and I'm listening to all the women talk about what, you know, needs to be done and how do we do, you know, the initiative to, you know, protect our brothers and sisters that are incarcerated. I've said this on numerous occasions, and the hard part is getting the people to understand this measure. When you have, and I think they call it the Allegation 47 inside the federal penitentiaries, what they call FCIs, Federal Correctional Institutions, and then you have the state facilities, okay? They have what they call a Delphi cult technique, all right? That's supposed to be aimed at prison reform. But in actual reality, that's not what it really means. It's taking the control of someone's mind from a conversational hypnosis. This is what those doctors and all this, you know, go on when the proceedings go on. So once they can get them in the facility, then that's when that, you know, brainwashing becomes an, you know, a real consent of an informed. That's why a lot of the people in legislation won't take a look at these matters. But here's catch 21, all of you that are on here talking, even that little girl that spoke, the little Caucasian girl. I'm pretty sure she's a Caucasian girl because of her voice. No offense to you. What I'm saying is this, and I hope all of you can get that. It's never a first until we try. Because...
Right.
The rudimentary laws, I don't know if you guys ever heard of rudimentary law. Rudimentary law is about the inferior, which is, you know, the states that do create mass incarceration, okay? Now, the austerity programs that are out here. They're out here in the mainstream. Nobody's exercising those jurisdictions that take part in the particular geographic areas that isolate people. Even the county jails are being questioned now, and that's a good thing. But it's going to take more advocates and more activist people that have loved ones incarcerated. These five young girls were telling me how the prison officials used their manipulation tactics to get at them, trying to have sex with them to promote something where they can commute their sentences. This is inhuman, okay? This is inhuman. These girls wanted this stuff to get out. So a lot of these guys that claim to be activist people that fight for, you know, the incarceration, I disagree with all of them. I just heard all of you talk about, you know, the monetary existence of how it became, you know, GoFundMe and so forth. Okay, let's put the money aside right now. Let's put that aside and look at the constitutional rights of liberty of people that are incarcerated, because they do have. They have an astonishing liberty if people can pay attention to that. The collusive, you know, presumption to that is the power of what states and federal government institutions are doing, because it becomes a cash flow from them. Commissary prices are going up and so forth. The same thing what happens out here in general. But it's never a first until we try, notwithstanding, to hold the DOJ and their attorneys and all these people from the BOP, Bureau of Prisons, accountable for overlooking the mass incarceration and the illegal sentencing of our brothers and sisters. So Allegation 47, which isolates and ignores disenfranchisement of prisoners getting early release on parole, that's how Delphi cult techniques are implemented. They want them to take classes. And when they get eligibility close to their parole date, they're always, man, getting the door slammed in their face, because a lot of our people out here, just like the lady said, she just got on the computer and she looked up this other individual, you know, and then a book being read. Look, America has always been a, you know, communist country that loves incarceration, because nobody's putting that certificate against them. And you have to. The constitutional rights that give, you know, the false liberty to the people, man, are being lied to. And we know that. We know that, people. But the difference between the judicial districts, they're not being challenged by the public. God dang, right there. So when I spoke to the five girls and the two that got released, I said I would do my part, no different than doing the part for my sister, Leona, and her predicament. But there can be justice on the part of them incarcerated if we take it to a propitiate fundamental practice and include in our suit against them for the mass incarceration that collaborates to commit treason against people that are struggling to get out. That's the hard part. Because as long as we're going to continue to talk about the game, we're not forcing them. So this notwithstanding penalty violates what? The Constitution. So the Constitution becomes a death sentence. This is what federal judges and state judges do all the time. So when they're pressing situations in their hands, our brothers and sisters pay for that incarceration. And these taxpaying dollars go to that. Rather than going to different countries and dropping bombs, pay attention here, America. You're the fault. Because the Romanistic behavior, one day, like now, it's happening. And I've urged people, put the energy on the people that are incarcerated, municipally. Because then and only then can we prevail by getting them home. And we all have a loved one or two incarcerated. That's the energy I always try to focus on with people. Because as long as we're going to talk about things that's not, you know, complicit or irrelevant to the situation, them brothers and sisters are going to figure out ways that show us we're not committed to them. And that's where the rejection comes in. And the final piece I will say, this is self-insufficient because the jurisdiction is about humanity. Right there. We don't talk about that, folks. We talk about shit that don't belong to us. The rights of liberty are also with every male and female and children, mind you, that grew up in them systems. That life and freedom belongs to them, and it's sad that a majority of them would use these oppositions to gain some kind of leeway. I don't know if this young girl is going to continue the efforts. I've been in the game since I got out of the prison system. And this is back in my incarceration after I had to graduate high school in 1979. I made parole in 78, and I had that. They didn't have those leg monitors or wrist monitors, okay? I had to be in my grandfather and my grandmother, my mom's house, at 3 o'clock after school. And when that they used to have a program called the Youth Act, folks. I don't know if you remember that. But the Youth Act, if you were committed with a heinous crime like murder, that's what I was, okay? We were obligated to fulfill that because that applied to us. The Youth Act applied to children or people under the age of 15. When I went to prison at the age of 13 from the conflict we had here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, the Wounded Knee Takeover, that's what made me take the life of a law enforcement officer. I don't, man, shame myself for that bullshit. Those people were abusive to us, and they still are to this day. So Seminole, Crowgrass, of what these acts are doing, we're not really taking them seriously like we should. And until we conclude these, you know, prior cases against what's happening, then and only then, America's going to keep doing unjust. And I will it back to you, sister. When I get pumped in it, that's the way. Because there, you, if you notice, nobody's escaping from the institutions. They're forcing them into accepting life for shit that they didn't do. That's inhuman. And we all know that. Until that energy goes back to them, then and only then can we free our sisters and brothers. Back to you all. And thank you guys for allowing me to comment right there.
Thank you. Astika, do you have anything to say to that? Or Madeline?
Definitely like to take a second to just touch on what he said, and I really appreciate his thoughts and sharing his story with incarceration. One thing that I will say is don't underestimate this next generation. We have media, we have, you know, a lot of new resources, and we're just, you know, everyone is being exposed to these issues, whether it's through social media, whether it's through the classes that we take, whether it's through critical race theory. We got young people fighting to keep critical race theory within our schools so that people learn about issues like this rather than being blinded to them and going their entire lives not even realizing that incarceration means abuse. It means brutalization. It means dehumanization. So I will say that this next generation, we're going to work very, very hard to get these people who've been wrongfully convicted or dehumanized in their time in prison, the help that they need. One of the reasons why I believe that is because I found out about restorative justice and largely, like, what my study was or how I studied restorative justice started with a TED Talk, and then I took a class on how to basically solve justice-related issues. So I think that just shows that, like, we are, as a younger generation, we're starting to learn more and more about these issues and becoming aware in our own education. I don't know if that was true, you know, maybe, like, even 50 years ago that people were being taught this in school. So I will say do not underestimate this next generation. We're going to work very hard to get as many people as we can justice. I know I will, and I think I can speak for my peers as well.
I think that's why, Astika, that's why I have so much respect for you, because you are of the younger generation that's really doing something about it. And I have to say, this it's called the Emancipated Initiative in Massachusetts, and these are young people. I mean, I'm talking very young women, especially, who are out there doing just what Astika is doing and speaking out and doing things in favor of reform, in favor of abolishing. And it's young people like that that I have so much respect for, because there's so many young people out there that are committing crimes themselves, which is making it worse for the advocates who are trying to have this reform. So young people like you, Astika, I have so much respect for. I really do. I admire everything about you. And I just have to get that out there.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name is Amin. I'm in Detroit. I'm from the Independent Solidarity Nation. We have a human rights and investigation division.
So what we do, we take cases out throughout the country, and we look at the cases. Is there human rights being violated? And not only that, people understand, we investigate the judges, the police, everybody's involved. We look at the case and see what type of violation, human rights violation, have been violated. You must also charge these people with crimes of humanity and human rights violations. These are all human rights violations what's been happening. And these people must be charged with that. And, because human rights violation, because we are humans, so you're born with inalienable rights and you have rights. So when they start violating their human rights, that's what they need to be charged because this is international law. And once you start charging the people with them types of crimes, then it becomes a totally different atmosphere with these people. So that's what we do.
That's why I think it's so important to network. I mean, I've been networking with advocates across the country for the last 25 years, and it was actually a lot of them that referred clients to us when we did national work. But that's why I think it's important to network. I think it's important to join all these Facebook groups that are either loved ones who have incarcerated or people that are advocating for those incarcerated. I belong to like 40 groups, and I am always inviting people, other advocates, to join these groups so that they can get a feel for what's going on in their state or in their issues, in the work that they're doing. So what you're talking about, my brother, as far as the human rights thing, that's good to know, and that's why I say it might be good to connect with everybody on the show, everybody calling in, and if you can, connect with them on Facebook, connect with them in email, whatever you can, and start working together on these issues. And, it's getting to be where it's not just about the color either, because let's face it, everybody right now is being oppressed if they're not of a higher status, if they're not elite, if they're not amongst the wealthy, if they're not amongst the high static in government. Everybody is the same. They're all being penalized. They're all getting sentencing. They're all being tormented and tortured. It's us against them when it comes to statuses.
There's a code, there's a statute, and the penal code. It's called all crimes of commercial means all crimes is have a money value to it. So when people go to jail, they are monetized and they are dehumanized and they are placed as a number. And so each crime has a value to it. And that's why it's going to be, I'm not saying it's impossible for people people incarcerated has a monetary value. And these people that own the prison make between per day $25 to $500 per day on each prisoner. So that's why not only the judges get a part of it, the Congress, everybody get a part of that. They have what you call prison bonds, in which they monetize on the stock market, and that's how they get their money. So that's why it's so hard for them, for people don't want to reform prison because they make too much money off it. But you have a great idea, get people with rehabilitation, but these people making so much money off of it, it might be kind of very hard for them to try to, reform their prison system because so much money is being distributed to the judges, the politicians, everybody else.
To my understanding, what you're speaking of, I know is an exact fact because I have been studying GSA bonds, and that deals with those that are incarcerated, the bid bonds, the performance bonds, and the payment bonds. Each one has a penal sum to it. And that's what I'm looking into. Within the last year, I've been studying to understand not only the terminology, but how to go about utilizing that as a power of attorney on behalf of some of these wrongfully convicted individuals rather than having to wait on the state, because then that would not also show not only were they held captive, I would have to say, and being traded on with the stock market, but also the GMI utility database, that would show up corporations that has been trading on their number, basically. And this is the most crucial fraud that I've known. And the reason I can speak to that is because as of today, it's 14 years that I'm still listed as dead in the Social Security Administrative Database file, the death master file. I've been trying to get that fixed. But it goes back to me having to understand the system of how not only something like this could occur, and you can look my name up, Madeline Coburn, CNN. The story is out there. And I've been fighting not only my life trying to be resurrected, but also it's been allowing me to understand the actual system, the quantum financial system, Fidelity system that processes these EFT bonds and GSA bonds that has these individuals incarcerated. And that's something that is not being talked about, maybe in a private manner, but it needs to be public so that those in government will know the crimes and treason acts that they are committing against humanity. That's where this all comes from. I get it. I'm still fighting, but I still have a voice, like platforms with Leona and CNN, to talk about what is taking place. No, Madeline Coburn is not dead. I'm very much alive. I'm fighting on behalf of incarcerated prisoners that's been wrongfully convicted in the states that no one in authority is willing to take a look at because it's all about bonds. That's what's keeping the states that are corporate. I didn't realize all states in this corporate federal corporation known as United States, all of them have done EIN numbers. And this is what's not being disclosed and discussed. These are entities, corporations that are suing natural living human beings, men and women. That can't be under common law. And I understand we're under admiralty law. That's where the problem lies, this Babylon system. It's not enough for us to just have these conversations. We need to be networking when we get off these phones to see how we could come together. I'm sure we're all in different states, but we all have something to contribute. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be on this call.
And I bet right now, if you ever got a virtual meeting going to discuss all this, it would be off the board. I bet you would get so many people going on to their virtual meeting to talk about these things, because you're right.
I presented it to a federal judge in the Missouri Eastern District Federal Court. Ronnie White Sr. is his name. He recused himself from my tort claim, and he closed and sealed my case. That's the kind of result and feedback that you get. They don't want to deal with it. I wouldn't doubt if he's being paid under the table some kind of way, a kickback from all of these cases. They normally do.
That's how we find out, too, who's sincere in wanting to see criminal justice reform or who wants to see positive changes. If they recuse themselves, then that means they're not as interested as they're trying to make people believe, because there's a lot of people that are just doing it for political benefits. So doing something like this, you will find out just who is really trying to make positive changes, if they are actually... You know, I've been invited by politicians to join some of these events that they have that, you know, towards funding and towards abolishing a lot of these inappropriate sentences. And I see them really doing the work. There's two or three in Massachusetts that are really working hard for prison reform. And those are the ones that I really want to support because they're transparent about what they're doing. And that's what I'm looking for, people who are serious.
You know, it's not the judge don't choose. He don't want to get out in public. Once you start exposing them, they'll do their best to try to hide things because they know once anything's in the public, the people start looking at them crooked, but they already crooked. You know, so
yeah.
it's about hiding as much as you can. But I also, with them GSA bonds, I did a study on it. I know exactly what you're talking about because I did a study on it before. And you have federal GSA bonds along with that also. You know, it deals with the prison system, you know. So, like I said, each prison has a monetary fund on their back. And that's why they keep them so long to milk them as much money as they can from them.
And most of the bonds amortize after 30 years. That's why they make life at 25 or 30 years.
Yes.
And you think so.
So even though in Mr. Kevin Strickland case of 43 years been wrongfully convicted, the state of Missouri still got paid off of him and his labor.
Yes, they did. Millions of dollars.
Millions of, multi-millions of dollars for 43 years.
Yeah.
But they didn't give him any compensation because there's no law in Missouri that is legislated in regards to if you are exonerated. Well, by DNA, they have that law. But if you don't have DNA involved with your case, you don't. There's no compensation, no matter how long you've been locked up. But that's something that needs to change under House Bill 1042. And hopefully, within the coming weeks, God say the same, I would have Representative Lakeisha Bosley, a state representative of Missouri, who's sponsoring that particular bill in regards to this matter for wrongful convictions in Missouri.
You saying that people know, maybe a lot of people don't understand or know that when a policeman or a prison guard get out of the character of whatever authority was a delegate, they go beyond that authority, you can actually sue them in their private capacity. So when they start beating on people on the prisoners, then they can actually do a suit against them in their proper capacity, not in their legal capacity, but their proper capacity, and they can actually take them what take them to court, federal court, whatever court they feel they want to take them in.
Well, can they take them to federal court if it's a state prison? That's what I'm wondering.
It depends what type of law they violated, because you have, under the Sixth Amendment, you have a right to to due process, and you have a right not to be treated you got a right to be treated rightly. They can't
treat you in a bad character. People have a right, but are their rights being violated even by human rights advocates? Because I know of prisoners who's having every right taken from them, and still they're not able to get help. Prisoners who have not been able to even go to religious services or have a religious person meet with them, a person that's had all their belongings taken from them, a person that has had their law books taken from them and given away to a library, prison library, prisoners who have no clothes whatsoever, prisoners who have no books, they're given one book or two books, and these people have no television, they have no way of keeping their mind stimulated, and they're being held indefinitely in their cells for 22 to 24 hours a day, let out 1 or 2 hours a day. And this has been going on for years. Where are the human rights people there? When people have been notified and have been, people have tried to get help for these prisoners, and they're getting the same BS from everybody. They don't have the funds or they don't have the manpower. Why are they posting on their website pages that this is what they do when they can't do it? Right here in Massachusetts, Prison Legal Services, they don't have the funds and they don't have the manpower, but yet there's nothing on their website that said they're temporarily suspending all applications. And the same with other law firms. And ACLU is one of the biggest jokes in the nation. Because when we did national, we tried to get help for three prisoners that ended up dying in the hole when we were actually trying to reach out so many times to ACLU in Pennsylvania and getting nowhere, even some of the state legislators.
You also got to remember some people's being paid off, so they won't help people. It depends where the person's heart is. If he for equality and justice, then he's gonna go out and do his best to fight for that person. That's what we do. But if he just is there for a paycheck, you never know what he's gonna do.
Well, as I said earlier, too many people who have influence and can actually help someone, they're either trying to build themselves up or they're trying to get. There's so many that will go before the media, and that's where they get acknowledged because they're seen out in the media so often. Everyone thinks that they're actually doing some work. I've had, with an organization, we've had prisoners that we have over and over and over again try to get help for, and the same organizations that are out there in the media and joining all these coalitions are the very ones that are denying. They're denying. They're doing absolutely nothing. And we have prisoners that will confirm it if anybody ever wanted to check on some of these prisoner these organizations that are supposed to be representing prisoners. We have prisoners that will talk to them to let them know But unfortunately, we live in a society, like I said, everybody wants to be accepted by their peers. Everyone wants to be with the majority that seems to be doing so well. And so we do have a lot of people that are about talking, nothing else.
Sister, let me ascertain one more question for everybody. This is Chinupa, guys. My phone number is 605-517-2621. Some of you females that are on the show today, call me if you're serious. Now, the brother that mentioned, you know, about how the monetary existence, you know, mammon is being played into these systems. You know, we have to look at this thing very truthfully and thoroughly, okay? And this is why I say this all the time, and it's really great to hear that Sister Leona is starting to see exactly, and she probably known this for quite some time, that a lot of you will put a self-image on yourself to claim that you're part of the economic system that fights for human rights and the cause of men and women being incarcerated. I disagree with that because that's why I stay off the computer, and I'm so glad that I'm computer illiterate. Being computer illiterate gives you the chance to read everything. So what I'm saying here, again, when I look at the bar courts, okay, from every type of state, county, federal, and so on, even tribal from the native perspective, it's never a strong confirm of a response that gives the system a denial. And I mean the system because nobody advocates in that level. So that economic and social class, when petitioners are bringing a respondent to the subject, everyone that is in Congress, the courts, and so forth, they all fall under Roman's law. How many people can even agree with me on that little term there? Okay? Roman's law. So there is no such constitutional authority. This is how America works because America is the corporation after the real independence left. That's the difference. So today, petitioning, you know, all these things that are going on become hearsay. That's the thing. And you all know that, folks. So sufficiently enough, if we are ever to get justice, we have to go after them the same way they want to incarcerate us all the time for taking part and keeping this continuation of participating or even voluntarily showing where their credit debt is. That's how they exchange the hidden truth, see? That's what they call what a revenue of institutional agreements. Make sense? Hell yeah, it does. So the federal rules that, you know, the brother was actually mentioned, this is what they do. Every human being in this country is worth something. It's worth something no matter how much the amount of the mammon is. They can say you have $10,000 right now, Sister Leona. It's yours. They can say that. But as long as you don't know it, they can make money off it and it keeps interest going day in and day out. That's how judgments work to avoid the courts rendering it. See? So these things can happen if we start filing genocide and propatriot fundamental practice complaints against them through the world courts. Go look at them other jails outside the waters in different countries. They're partially empty. But here in America, my country, due process clause is supposed to apply to every male and female convict or whatever you want to call them. And the courts have to relieve that by a party of legal representation. We don't talk like those things. That's the hard part. Oh, but wait a minute now. Wait a minute. All them people that raided the Capitol building when Trump was, you know, getting out of office and stuff. People, if you were strong enough to use your heart from a basis, you know, of freedom, you as people in any state can hold them accountable through a tribunal. And that brother that was mentioning there, he can admit to that, and then that's the way to go. And I really, really love that when we get into these kind of things because that's what I'm helping these girls deal with right now because the final judgment is going to be vested on that order to hold the system accountable. And I will it back to all of you, and thank you again.
I think it's great because this is one way for the awareness to get out there and for people to actually start getting active. People are tired of being in their house because of the pandemic. They're tired of the limitations that they've had to be in and go through all these almost 2 years now. So this is the time for you to actually get active and start making a difference. and you can do it from your home. You can do it through letter writing. You can do it through phone calls. You can do it through virtual meetings, the Zoom meetings. There's so many ways for everyone to come together and actually make a difference. And we have a young lady on this line, on this radio show with us today that spoke about it earlier. She spoke about it not too long ago, and she's motivated. So there's a lot of young people out there. If you're listening to the audience and you're in the audience and you're listening, please do try to get involved. I mean, you can find people on the internet. You can find people on Facebook that are actually doing a lot of these things around criminal justice reform. And there's a lot of you students that are going to law school. There's a lot of you students that are going to school for psychology. Start using some of those opportunities. Start using some of those opportunities for your internship or just to try to do something positive. Because right now we need the young people, more so than ever before, who are for positive changes, to start speaking out on the radio show. Join us. Come on the radio show anytime. On Tuesdays, we have a free-for-all. Anybody can call in and talk about anything. Brainstorm. Come up with solutions. Get your legislative members to become involved. You know, these are the things that we have to look at.
You know, I want to say this. Maybe a lot of people might not agree with it, but we are at war. We are at war, and the art of war is to know your enemy and the form of strategies and know how to attack them.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. I put myself on mute because apparently they choose to start doing lawn work at 3 in the afternoon here on the East Coast. So I'm going to mute myself, let everyone else finish talking.
I said we are at war, and the art of war is there to know our enemy and to form a strategy to defeat your enemy. So that's what we need to do, to form a strategy to defeat our enemies. Because that's what they are.
I just want to say we're coming up to the holiday again, Christmas and the new year. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be hurting over these holidays because they're either alone or they're going to be without family or they're going to be behind those prison walls. They're going to be in cells without anything. So if there's anything that anyone can do to try to make their holiday at least livable so that they can tolerate and endure until it's over with. And a lot of people are. They're looking forward to the holidays being over with because they have nothing to look forward to. So let's just keep them all in prayer as well. Now, we have about 7.5 minutes. If anybody wants to give their contact information, their website, their information about their organization, whatever the case may be, we have 7.5 minutes, so just let it out to everyone so that they'll know how to contact any of you. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Chinupa. Do call me, area code 605-517-2621, and I will respond to you as quick as we can because the brothers and sisters that are in common, you know, that are incarcerated, they're going to become a commonwealth, you know, situation that's happening. And we have to get involved to turn it around. Because when you have that understanding, being not too biased because of how you speak, all of you have some loved one that's incarcerated. And I thank all of you for allowing me to come on. And you too, sisters, thank you for allowing me to come on. And do call me. Do call me, folks. 605-517-2621. I'm Chinupa Gluhan Money with the Free and Independent Lakota Nation and the Strongheart Warrior Society here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation of the state of South Dakota. Thank you all for participating on Sister's Show. Look forward to the continual my RU separation on everything that aims at the system. Thank you all. Love you all. Be well.
Thank you, Chinupa. One of the things I have to remind everyone, too, is if you have family members, just put yourself in the shoes of others. And I know that many put themselves in the shoes of the victims on the outside, but we also need to try to put ourselves in the shoes of the families and victims on the inside as well. So just keep that in mind. It could be one of your sisters or brothers. It could be your mother or father. It could be your cousins. It could be your aunt or uncle. It could be your grandparent. Who knows? But we know one thing. If it was the shoe was on the other foot, everyone's going to want to get the most help that they can get, any help at all. when they know their loved one is being abused or deprived or kept without anything, especially around the holidays. So, Madeline, you want to give in any of your information?
Yes, absolutely. You can look me up on Facebook or LinkedIn under Madeline Michelle Colvin. I'm out on the Internet. If you just type my information in, you can reach me directly at mmcolburn, C-O-B-U-R-N, the number one, at gmail.com. And by phone, I can be reached at 636-336-2597. Thank you, Leona, for this opportunity.
Thank you, Madeline. Anyone else, Asika, do you want to give a Facebook page or email or anything? Or anyone else?
Yes. Yeah.
Please do.
Sure. I wanted to let you know that I am actually commuting home right now, so it might be a little bit loud, so let me know if I cut out or something happens with the connection here.
Okay.
But my LinkedIn is, you can just type in my name, A-S-T-I-K-A, last name J-O-S-H-I. And you guys can just connect with me on there via a LinkedIn message and see kind of the work that I've done so far. So I thank you guys for letting me talk, and hearing your thoughts is always very much appreciated. And I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you again, Asika. I really appreciate and honor you. And I hope and pray that everyone will try to, any young people especially, will try to connect with Asika so that you can offer your services and maybe work together with her in the goal for everyone that's going through these trials.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you so much, Leona, again. And I hope you guys have a great day and great holiday.
Thank you. You have a great day, too. Thank you so much, Asika. Now, does anybody else, does anyone else on the board want to give any information?
My name is Amin Abdullah. I'm from the Independent Taliban Nation. You can call me at 734-536-3504. You know, our mission is to help the people anywhere we can. So that's our goal.
Amin, can you do me a favor? Repeat that again, slower.
I think, Leon, you probably know DeBrill. Me and DeBrill work together. It's 734-536-3504.
Thank you so much, Amin. Thank you so much. Anyone else? We have a couple more. 605-314. Okay, I believe they are just listening. Okay, so we have a couple of minutes, and once again, I'm going to be closing this with a thank you and appreciation for all of you listening in to the radio show and the radio shows that we've been having. I want to thank all of you who have come on to speak and those of you who have come on to listen. I want to thank you and wish you all, even out in the audience, I want to wish you all a happy holiday. And I want to ask you to please reconsider or consider the people that are in these prisons, to look at them as human beings and not objects. So look at their situations if you can. Learn more about them and not what people are telling you that don't even know them. There are so many different circumstances for what leads people behind prison. There are so many people that are in prison that are suffering or were suffering from psychological issues, mental illnesses, that were suffering from wrongful convictions, suffering from the corruption that goes on in the courts, in law enforcement. And as I say all the time, we have some good police officers, and we have some good correctional officers, and we have some good officials. But we have a lot of them that need to be looked at and that need to be reevaluated. And those of you who know of correctional officers or officials or law enforcement, which I have, as I mentioned before, I have a loved one inside, but I also have a loved one with law enforcement. I just want to say one thing. If they know that something is wrong, if they know their peers are doing some abuses, are doing something wrong behind those prison walls or in the community, then they need to speak up. Speak out against it. And if you're too afraid to speak out against your abusive peers, your corrupt peers, then something, as one person said one time on Facebook, you're no different. Even though you may not be doing it, if you tolerate it, if you allow it to happen, and you don't report it, then you're just as much of the problem as they are. So I hope you'll think about this. And if you have family members that are in law enforcement or in the penal system, please talk to them and let them know when we hear these people say that they need more training, police need more training, prison officials and SEALs need more training, it's not about training. It's about the way you're brought up. If you are brought up with any kind of morals, you're not going to want to see these things happening. You're going to report it. You're not going to be able to tolerate it because it's already in your heart to do good. And I just wanted to let that out there. I wanted to thank all of you for listening in. Madeline, I want to thank you for being on with us. Chinupa, all the others that were on the show with us today, I thank you all for coming on, and I thank you, audience, for listening in. And I hope everyone has a happy holiday, and I hope that we can see in the new year some positive changes. I thank all of you. We are now going to end this episode. Thank you.